This episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast is sponsored by Loot Crate, a monthly subscription box full of awesome geek and gamer items as well as pop culture gear. For less than $20 per month, you get 6 to 8 items, including a t-shirt, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. My kid loves them. April's theme is Quest. Form your party to explore everywhere from far-off kingdoms to worlds hidden within worlds with exclusive items from Labyrinth, Harry Potter, the History Channel's Vikings, and Uncharted 4. As we said, you get the t-shirt, you get the loot pin to help equip you for all your adventures. And here's the important part. You have till April 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe to receive this month's crate. If you miss the deadline, you got to wait till next time around. Make sure you head to www.lootcrate.com/spoilers. Enter the code spoilers to save $3 on any new subscription. Just that easy. Then sit back, wait for all the awesome loot crates to arrive at your door. And remember, head www.lootcrate.com/spoilers. Use the code spoilers and save $3 on your new subscription. The widget recommends it.
Yay, podcast night!
This episode is brought to you by Major Spoilers VIP members.
VIP stands for very important people, and their small monthly contributions ensure that this podcast remains free for all of you.
If you would like to become a bronze, silver, or gold VIP member, go to members.majorspoilers.com for more information.
I sure do thank you for your support. Now, here's your show.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course spoilers, and goes into detail about the topics discussed. So, if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items they talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, question and answer time with the mighty Major Spoilers crew. What's Rodrigo's sign? Can Steven speak French? Is Ashley allergic to shellfish? And what's the deal with the way I talk? Plus, the dead rise, the League versus the Titans, high-stakes metatextuality with Tyler Durden, and warrior princesses, plus the skinning on the galaxy far, far away. So prepare your ears for some punching by our pop culture brain fist, because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 671 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for sharing. And thank you for all that you do, especially our Major Spoilers VIPs, people who keep this show afloat. You can find out more by pointing your browser to members.majorspoilers.com. Everybody's here this week. It's so glad to have everyone here. Matthew is here, and Rodrigo and Ashley. Everybody's here. It's so good to have everybody here.
We're like real people.
You're almost like real people, but one of you I've never met face to face, so maybe you're real. Maybe she's you're just a really good AI.
No, she's real. I met her.
Pretty mean AI, probably.
A pretty mean AI. All right,
Aeon Flux.
You're a kitty cat.
Let's put those mean AI skills to the test as we take a look at the news. Items this week include pictures of Doctor Strange on the set appear. Hashtag Comics receives $55 million to develop feature films based on its library of graphic novels. And Dead No More. Let's spin that wheel of destiny. Let us see where we land.
On a corpse.
Oh, right there. Dead No More now. Marvel has been sending out these teaser images all week. There's 6 of them total, and they form Spider-Man fighting a bunch of people who should be dead. We found out a little bit more about this Amazing Spider-Man number 19 issue that kicks off the Dead No More arc that arrives this fall. The mysterious man in the red suit has an offer for some of Spidey's greatest rogues. Obey him.
Santa Claus?
And your loved ones live. Fail him and lose them forever. Yes, exactly like Santa Claus. With the Rhino, the Lizard, Electro, and even Dr. Octopus at his side, things are looking bleak. But who else from Peter's past has reappeared? ?
You don't have to read.
Which I don't like. I think it should be !
Question mark. Exactly, because it's a question.
Pretty controversial, guys. Yeah, you don't want it to be an interrobang, the combination of a question mark and an exclamation point that nobody uses?
Yeah, but nobody knows what it means.
I come from a country where both questions and exclamations are clearly delineated by an upside down one at the beginning.
Right.
So I love that.
I don't even want to get into this.
Also, interrobang just sounds – never mind.
So what do you guys think
of
this?
Sounds like something you don't want to
say. Now, here's some things that I have some insight to this. that I'm not allowed to talk about. But I guess it is mentioned here in the story. The first part of this kicks off in the Marvel Free Comic Book Day Captain America Dead No More issue that comes out on May the 4th, I believe. Is that May 6th? Whatever Free Comic Book Day is. It's that first Saturday in May. And this is how comic books work. I do have all of the Free Comic Book Day issues sitting here in front of me, and I have read this issue, and I'm not supposed to spoil. This is from Diamond and Marvel. We're not supposed to talk about anything that goes on in this issue. Beyond,
did you enjoy it?
I thought it was interesting, but this man in the red suit, who's clearly, if you look at the image, the giant image that that has been released and put together, the man in the red suit is on the far side of the picture. He's the man with that weird jackal mask, which, if you know your Egyptian gods, then that will give you a little bit more insight into maybe who this person is. It wouldn't surprise me if there is a lot of that Anubis Egyptian stuff floating around in this series. But beyond that, yeah, it's interesting. I think people will definitely want to pick this up when the Free Comic Book Day issue arrives in May. The art is really nice. I like that.
There is a dead Spider-Man villain called the Jackal.
I was going to say, in fact, wasn't the Jackal the thing that kickstarted the whole clone saga?
He was, yes.
So maybe the Dead No More guys aren't actually resurrected people. They're clones.
Could be.
Dead
and
Riley?
And see, here's the thing. That's what I thought when I first saw that. I was like, oh, that's the Jackal. But then they start talking about the man in the red suit, and that guy's wearing a red suit. So that's who they have to be talking about. So
it's the reverse Jackal.
I have not given anything away as far as the contents of the story that hasn't been given away in the solicitation or what has appeared in the images. But yes, you do see Uncle Ben, you do see Captain Stacy, you do see potentially Punisher's family coming back through that smoke and haze that's in there. So there's a lot of people potentially returning from the dead. And if you're right about this being a clone saga, that really changes the whole nature of this piece.
I think I see Gene DeWolf and the Big Man.
I was going to say that the implication that it might be Ben Reilly and that they might be resurrecting that character, who, regardless of the quality of the clone saga as a story arc, is a very interesting character. That actually makes me care about this event now.
It's possible.
So let me ask you this. I mean, Rodrigo, not having any access to any of this, may have tipped it into what's really going on, because there is a thing, you know, it says right here, obey him and your loved one lives, fail him and lose them forever. That seems pretty, I mean, beyond just a snap of a finger, there could be some clony magic-y stuff going on in here.
Oh, could be.
Sure. I just think it's weird that it's like, oh, someone's manipulating Spider-Man's rogue gallery. And it's like, Spider-Man's rogue gallery teams up all the time. They're actually kind of like the guys that are known for teaming up.
I would also say
the four that they mention are part of the Sinister Six.
Six. Yeah.
The other thing is, look in the far side of that image and look who is clinking glasses with the Jackal
or the man in
the red suit. Sure looks like Gwen Stacy to me.
Yeah. Which would make sense. I mean, if you're looking at a Dead No More situation, somebody is seemingly bringing back from the dead important people from Spider-Man's life. But what if they're all from Earth too?
But again, it's an offer for some of Spidey's greatest rogues. So who has Rhino lost?
The Rhino is a weird Russian spy stereotype. So I think he had a girlfriend or a fiance die.
Okay. What about Doc Ock?
Dr. Octopus has, what's her name?
Is he still alive?
No.
Didn't he die?
Maybe by resurrecting himself, obey me and you can live. Don't and you will die.
Which makes sense. That makes sense for Dr. Octopus to be like, okay, Rhino, I'll kill your wife. Dr. Octopus, I'll kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dr. Octopus has that lady friend who he loves more than anything, who now works for Peter Parker, who's
Has to be somebody who has been dead. Hence the Dead No More.
At the end of the Superior Spider-Man's.
And what about who else are some Spider-Man rogues? Who are in the Secret Six?
I mean,
Lizard.
Okay, Craven. who has he lost? His son and wife. So that could be who's coming. That could be coming out of the mist there in the corner.
I think he ate his son, if I'm not mistaken.
Ew, wow. That's awesome. I know that the various goblins have died and been resurrected and then died again.
That's true. There's three generations of goblins that have lost other goblins.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know who's currently dead in the most recent incarnation of the Spider-Man, but
Harry and Norman are both alive.
Right. That's
there goes my theory.
I think Jason McIndale is dead, but nobody knows who Jason McIndale is.
So Ashley, now you're interested in this series.
I am, because, like I said, I don't have a love for the Clone Saga the way that some people from my age do, but but I do think that Ben Reilly is this really interesting character that they could do a lot with, but they have chosen not to.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that they might be treading back on that territory, I don't know. It makes it more interesting to me, and I mean. You know, almost everyone, because we're not all as cool as Matthew, I'm a slave to the spider character love. So I like that. I like the focus that it seems like this is bringing to the event, as opposed to I'm a little soured on company-wide Marvel events post-Secret Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think, though, I don't know for sure. I mean, we know that it starts in The Amazing Spider-Man, or actually the prologue kicks off in the... in the Free Comic Book Day edition. I'm not sure reading the Free Comic Book Day edition is going to be necessary to pick up Amazing Spider-Man number 19. But I'm wondering if this is just going to be like Spider Island or something like that, where this is not going to be look who Tony Stark lost and is now back. His sobriety has returned. You know, I don't think we're going to see. I think it's those kinds of things.
Spider Family crossover.
Yeah, this is definitely going to be a Spider Family crossover from what I'm gathering. This is written by Dan Slott.
Yeah, Venom is definitely in that promo pic.
Yeah.
And I think he has his own book right now. And the Prowler is there.
He's an agent. Yeah.
Yeah, Venom is Venom : Space Knight, which he's a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy now.
It's been a while since I've read Amazing Spider-Man. And so I think this is something that might get me back to picking up the issues, even though I don't know what's been going on since Secret Wars. I'm interested in this. Matthew, interested? No interested?
I read Dan Slott's Spider-Man depending on who's drawing it.
Okay.
And I do love Jim Chung, who did Young Avengers. So I'll probably, honestly, I'll probably wait till it's over and read it all as a chunk.
Okay.
But yeah, it's something that I'm at least interested in. And the fact that may be Gwen and it may be Uncle Ben, there's clearly something bigger going on here. And Slott does really well with his self-contained events. I feel like they make sense after the fact, at least briefly. Which isn't always the case with the big crossovers, as Ashley mentioned, Secret Wars.
Mm-hmm. Almost never, in fact.
Yeah, when you're in it, when you're submerged in it, subsumed, whatever that word is, it feels like it's very immediate and very important. But then you get to the end and you're just like, well, crap, that didn't do anything. And as long as you can get to the end of something and feel like there is at least some ramification of this, because, Slott did that with his Ends of the Earth thing. When Dr. Octopus first became Spider-Man, it was contained within the Spider-Man books, but it was a really solid thing, and it actually ended up being a springboard for the next few plots and brought us to this current era of Spider-Man as Iron Man.
Mm-hmm. Rodrigo, what about you? Interested in this or not interested in this?
I don't know.
I mean,
I'm interested in what's going on in Spider-Man in general, but... always the idea of bringing back dead characters just automatically points against for me. So unless this is actually not about that and this is just like some small aspect of it, I'd be more interested. But it is called Dead No More,
right?
So
let me ask you this: this is a weird way of looking at this. We've seen Ben Reilly come back in a ghost form or in flashback form. Or in afterlife form, and Uncle Ben is still dead, and you never bring back Uncle Ben, right?
They do.
Except in Spider-Gwen.
Yeah. So the question is, if the edict is, we will never bring back Uncle Ben, even though he may or may not be a clone, does that kind of negate their argument of we'll never bring back Uncle Ben?
I don't know that we don't bring back Uncle Ben is so much an edict as it is good writing. You know, it's like there's a lot more stories that you can tell with a dead Uncle Ben than with a living Uncle
Ben. Yeah, so does that hurt? I mean, is that harmful then, even if you bring him back, whether he's a clone or not?
Yes, but it really does is it undermines the greater construct of Spider-Man, but Marvel is clearly operating under a what matters is what we're telling you now theory. And I can tell you that there are, I can think of four different times as they brought back Uncle Ben. The last one as recently as 2007.
Right.
So they've done it before, and it's always been something else. So if they bring back Uncle Ben for real and have Uncle Ben back for real, I really feel like it's going to be one of those changes like when the Fantastic Four had red suits for 2 years and then the new writer came in and they didn't. But again, it's a question of, are you looking at, will this arc of Spider-Man be awesome? Or are you looking at, can you piece it together with the last 50 years of Spider-Man? So the answer to that first question is it could be. And the answer to that second question is, if you bring back Uncle Ben, yeah, it's going to be more destructive to that greater fabric than it is to the story being told. But that's the case with many of these big hook events. You'll remember when Peter Parker took off his mask for a year.
Yeah. Do you think and again, we don't know. I mean, we know from what the solicitation says, follow the man in red and your loved ones live, fail him and lose them forever.
It's probably Daredevil.
Do you think that is it's the man without
fear. Daredevil got lost. He, you know, he's not in Hell's Kitchen because the man can't see.
All right. It'll be interesting. Ashley, you have any final thoughts on this?
It's probably the most excited I've been for a Marvel Free Comic Book Day in a while. So I think it's a good use of their hype machine right now. But it really could go either way.
Yeah. Free Comic Book Day is, let me find the exact date here, is, dang it, you guys, if you're going to put your free comic, May 7th, you go to their website, that should be the first thing you see on the Free Comic Book Day website.
May the 7th be with you.
All right. Okay, cool. Listeners, you can head over to majorspoilers.com. You can check out these stories and a whole lot more. And while you're over there, I think what you should do is click on that Amazon link and buy Tale of Tallest Rabbit by Rodrigo Lopez.
Hey, I know that name.
And here's the reason why I think people should do this. Number one, it's written by Rodrigo. You all know Rodrigo and you want to support Rodrigo. But whatever purchase you make through that Amazon link over at majorspoilers.com, a little bit comes back our way. So it's almost like paying Rodrigo twice.
Yeah.
So generous. Much love.
Yeah. And
at no additional cost to you.
Exactly. Now, maybe you don't want to buy that book. I don't know why you wouldn't, but you're going to go buy that book anyway. While you're over there, I'm so surprised at what you can buy at Amazon.com. I mean, like, everything is there. Now, someone said, oh, Steven, maybe if someone had the Tesla 3 up on Amazon, you could buy it there. No, sadly, you can't buy the Tesla 3, the M3 from Amazon. But you can buy a bunch of other Tesla products if you need to, not cars. But you can buy toys for inside, outside. You can buy toys that are electronic. You can buy toys that are not electronic. I mean, they have just about everything under the sun over at Amazon.com. And you should go check it out and see if the thing that you're looking for can be found there. Matthew, you said your store down the street doesn't sell that drink that you drink anymore.
Yeah, they don't make it anymore.
Oh, they don't? Because I bet if you looked on Amazon, they might have it there. And then you can have whole pallet of it shipped to you.
I might be wrong about this.
A whole pallet.
But I think nowadays you can actually have like a standing order with Amazon. To where you're like, okay, every week I need this or that, like toilet paper or whatever, and they'll just ship it to you.
I know many parents who do that for their tiny
with
humans.
Their diapers. Yep. And I think I think you have these little things that you can use with like your detergents too, where you just kind of trigger it and it'll just say, okay, time to make another order for detergent or toilet paper or diapers or whatever it may be. Amazon.com is the place to go. Let's do some reviews, everybody.
Reviews.
All right, so this week I'm taking a look at the brand new animated movie Justice League versus Teen Titans. This is from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. This is the tale, and the thing is, this is really weird because if you go onto Amazon to buy this and you read the initial solicitation for this story, for this movie, it's way off from what the actual movie's about. So real quickly, and I think they did it on purpose to make Robin look more like more of a dick than he really is. And this is actually unintentional pun. This is one of the few times. This is one of the few times where I've given two cares about Damian Wayne. And what's happened is Justice League has Damian working as crowd control, and he gets mad and isn't doing exactly what everyone says, takes a mission in his own hands. He does defeat the bad guy. But the Justice League is like, look, man, you got to get under control. And so Batman makes the decision to ship him off to Teen Titans headquarters, where obviously he gets along with no one and everybody there hates him. The Teen Titans are made up of Raven, Beast Boy, Blue Beetle, led by Starfire. And then later in the movie, Cyborg comes in to help help them out. But that is your Teen Titan, and then Robin. What this movie is about is Trigon is trying to bust through to this realm. And over the course of the movie, he takes possession of the Justice League. And then he comes to this Earth. So the only people who can stop Trigon, of course, are Raven and the rest of the Teen Titans, which they then have to go to hell and do some things there, which is kind of interesting, especially with the interactions and relationships between Robin and Raven, which I thought were really good. For those of you that thought that Batman v Superman was way overly violent, and for those of you who thought that Supergirl Flash crossover was super, super sweet, this movie is smack dab in the middle. Because it has some very sweet, touching moments that make you go, ah, I care about Damian Wayne. And then it has moments where, and this isn't giving too much away, in order to excise the demons out of the Super Friends, they have to be imperfect vessels. So if you're going to make the Flash an imperfect vessel, perhaps having Superman stepping on his leg and breaking it will do the trick. That's one little spoiler I will give you right there.
Wow.
That's okay. Barry says that he can heal in 10 minutes. So it's not that big a deal. And now he's not possessed anymore. The animation is fine. It's the kind of the same animation that we've seen through the last couple of WB movies. The costume design is straight brand new 52. So they're still following that post Flashpoint universe that they've created. Yeah. Which, love it or not, it is what it is. And unfortunately or fortunately, it'll probably be two more years before they catch up to the new iteration of the costumes.
So does this actually happen in continuity with the Flashpoint Paradox?
All of these movies are. In fact, what was the last movie, Ashley? The Blood Feud or whatever it was, that was basically the first arc of Batman with the Court of Owls. And it also, I forget what that last movie was. I don't know if you remembered what it was. No, maybe not. I mean, she may have, but this is following up literally right where that last movie left off with, yes, Damian is the son of Batman, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, it's firmly in that universe. So there you go. Now, it is available on Blu-ray. It's available on DVD. It's available on digital HD. It's available on iTunes. And here's a hint, everyone. If you don't want to be burdened down with media and you want to get the movie ahead of everyone else, it's always available on iTunes a week to 2 weeks ahead of the physical release. That being said, if you want really cool tchotchkes, you might want to go get the physical copy, because Warner Brothers sent me, just arrived today, this gift set limited and numbered edition that has the Blu-ray, DVD, Ultra HD, Ultraviolet HD video all on there. And then it also has a little statue of Damian Wayne as well, which I guess is this special collector edition thing. So if you're into that, that's available. This looks kind of neat. I'm not taking it out of the package, but Warner Brothers sent it to me. I did see the movie. I thought it was okay from the storytelling standpoint. And if you want something that's kind of in between those two other examples that I gave you, Justice League versus Teen Titans is right there in the middle. If you don't like the New 52 and you don't like the direction the last couple of movies have gone, this movie's probably not going to be for you. I'm giving this 4 out of 5 slices of meatloaf. I thought the animation was good. I thought that the storyline was in line with everything else that they were doing. So, you know, it's okay. That is Justice League versus Teen Titans.
Does it align with Teen Titans Go?
So, I don't want to give too much away, but Minos and...
Masimenos?
Masimenos does not show up in this film.
Oh, but I love Masimenos.
I know, but they are not in this film. But I will
They're
say this.
Great.
Damian Wayne is the shortest Teen Titan, and in the cartoon, he's also the shortest Teen Titan. So Robin is the shortest no matter where you go. And that's all that I will tell you right now. I will tell you more after the show is over, if you really want to know, Matthew.
Okay. Because, you know, the finale of the Teen Titans series where Jericho and Panther and the Hornblower and Moss have to team up with Beast Boy?
No.
Oh, it's awesome.
No. If you are a Teen Titans Go fan and you know your core Teen Titans, then you might be happy with how this movie ends.
Except for Cyborg being in the Justice League and not the Teen Titans.
I didn't say that. Matthew said that. And speaking of Matthew, let's take a look at Matthew's review this week.
My review this week is what I like to refer to as torturing myself. Some months ago, I believe on this very show, I picked up and reviewed Fight Club 2, number 1, written by Chuck Palahniuk, with art by Cameron Stewart. Now, some 10 issues later, Fight Club 2 is coming to an end. Now, there's something very important that you need to know about Fight Club, and no, it's not that you don't talk about Fight Club. It's that fans of Fight Club the movie and fans of Fight Club the book, say it with me, there was a book, are very different beasties, and they have very different messages. So
there was a book?
In the previous 9 issues of Fight Club 2, we have had an ongoing plot where the character played by Ed Norton on TV, whose name is Sebastian, by the way, ends up having a new flare-up of Tyler. Somehow Tyler possesses his son by Marla. And at the end of the last issue, Tyler has taken Project Mayhem to its logical extension. They call it Project something else. The Tranquility Gambit. Can you guess what the Tranquility Gambit is?
Drugs?
No.
Bermuda
Blowing
Triangle?
Another building?
Blowing up everything. They have given nuclear weapons to all of Tyler's followers. And while Sebastian and his family hide underground in a cave, last issue ended with them detonating nuclear bombs across the planet and destroying the Earth. So this issue starts with a 2-page sequence of nuclear destruction across the planet. And you see the Hollywood sign, and you see the Brooklyn Bridge, and you see the Tower Bridge. You see massive destruction on a global scale, death, burning earth. And then we cut to a happy city with happy birds. And we cut to Chuck Palahniuk reading to his friends the last lines of the story, "They Lived Happily Ever After." And that's where this gets really nutsoid. And I have to say, I love this book, but I also hate this book. And I don't really understand this book, but I don't understand it in a way that I want to understand more. Because the story then shifts to Chuck trying to convince his friends that the ending he wrote, where the world is destroyed by nuclear bombs, is the right one. And then the fans show up at his door. And then we actually get the moment where he explains that the movie wasn't just like the book and the book ended differently. And we get the scene, wait, there was a book? And then it gets even weirder. Now, I'm telling you this right now. I love a meta story. I love a story where the structure is part of the story. And I love a story where the fact that the story is a story and that it's being written as a story is part of the story. At one point, Chuck is like, "Where are we going?" And somebody's like, "We want to surprise you." He's like, "You can't surprise me. I'm writing this." But it's really a wonderful, confusing, goofy moment. At one point, he asks for better weather, and his big smiley sun comes up, and somebody mocks him, and he's like, "That's not me. That's Cameron Stewart." Cameron Stewart drew the issue. This is weird, folks. That first issue had the strangest moment where bits of the story were obscured by rose petals. Certain bits and pieces and panels and pieces of dialogue could not be read because there were physically the image of rose petals superimposed as though they were on the page. That happens again here. There is one of the strangest moments ever involving Robert Paulson and his name. And as the book comes to an end, it doesn't come to an end. And then it starts to come to an end again, but then it doesn't. And then the rose petals reappear. And it, in the words of Father Guido Sarducci, you kind of had it to be there. I want you to read this book, and I want you to tell me what you feel about this book. Because really the point of this book is that the art is in some ways affected by the audience for it. And I will give you one spoiler. There is a moment where Tyler Durden does the one thing that every fictional character wishes they could do but can't.
Talk about Fight Club?
No.
Oh.
Although, that's a good callback. I like that. The last page of the book features a confrontation between Tyler and his literal creator. It's not really a confrontation, but it is a thing. And this is a weird book. This is a fun, weird book, but this is a weird, weird book. And I'm right now going through it as we speak to make sure that I'm kind of guessing it. This is my fourth and a half, because this isn't really a read through this book. And I actually expect more, because I'm now going to go back and I'm going to read all 10 of them together and see how it works. And I'll probably read issue 10 again, maybe a couple of times. If you know anything about the writer really likes to mess with your perception of reality. That did come through in the movie. That does come through in this particular issue, which is why I'm going to give it 3 out of 5 slices of meatloaf. It is definitely an above average affair. It's not for everybody. And if you can fathom this, I'm going to say something that anyone who's listened to the Major Spoilers podcast for the last 6 years can tell you may be the most frightening thing I've ever said, even more frightening than the Hyde Creek Lizard Man story. And that is that this book may be too meta for Matthew. Mm. But 3 slices of meatloaf, it is. And that is it.
All right, cool. That was out last week from
from Dark Horse.
Dark Horse Comics.
Which means I believe today there's a collected edition.
Maybe. You'll have to look at majorspoilers.com, where we have a rundown of every comic book that is scheduled to come out this week. Yeah. Usually goes up on a Monday, so check it out, majorspoilers.com. And now, Rodrigo, you will present us a story also from not a company called Dark Horse.
Also from not a company called Dark Horse, yes. I've got Xena number 1.
Yay!
And these are the further adventures of Xena, Warrior Princess, forged in the heat of battle, the romance, the danger. I forget how the opening goes. But
Something, Sam Raimi's brother.
Yep. So this picks up after the latest adventures of Xena, which may have actually, in fact, taken comic book form. I don't know that this is necessarily picking up after the end of the show, but basically the gods are dead. Xena has been asleep for a long time, and now she is in Roman times. And I don't know why they're doing that. It never chronological integrity never stopped them before. But in any case, this book, you know, for being a number one issue, it starts out in a really confusing way. It really, really expects you to already be familiar with everything that's going on. There are no hints here. There is no help. Nothing telling you Xena's backstory, nothing telling you her relationship to Gabriel. And more importantly, nothing letting you know what is happening at the beginning, which I pieced together partially from the solicitation to be that Gabriel is seeing something that's going to happen in the future. But what it really looks like is Gabrielle and a glowing Gabrielle out for a walk.
Mm.
Like, it's like there's two of her and one of them's glowing. And then they find something and it's like, oh, they found something. And then that ends and the actual thing starts. It's super confusing. And I know that there must have been a way to make that less confusing, but there wasn't, but they didn't. So that wasn't great. After that, it is kind of what you hope out of a Xena comic. It's got action. It's got basically your hero rolling into town and finding a new threat and her going, how can this be? I am familiar with this thing and it wasn't a threat before, you know? Like, kind of how what you hope out of a Sam Raimi joint, a la, you know...
His brother.
A la his brother, yes.
Yeah.
Ted.
Yeah. So, yeah. The art is pretty good. I really like it. At any given point, the characters don't look like Lucy Lawless and that other lady whose name I forget. But
Renee O'Connor.
Right. But they are fine. You can tell who everybody is at any given point. It's all very pretty. It all looks really good. So I really like it. And I don't mind that they don't look like the actresses all the time because the style is fine. You can always tell who's who. Obviously, the characters dress in a very specific and obvious way. So, you know, Xena dresses like Xena. So you can always tell who she is. Altogether, I give this 3 slices of meatloaf. It's interesting, but it's kind of difficult to get into it. There is a little blurb that tells you what's been happening. But even with that, it's very difficult if you haven't interacted with any Xena media in a while to get into it.
Yeah.
And that's my case. So I can only imagine how difficult picking up this number one issue would be for somebody who isn't familiar with the property at all.
This doesn't have anything like season 22 or something on it, right?
It might.
Okay. The only reason I ask because the way that you describe just jumping into it feels very much like what Buffy did with an Angel have done with their season 10s, what X-Files is doing, and what a lot of these comic book adaptations are doing.
And I think it might be. It might be a new volume. It might be a new acquisition because this is, I forget what company has this now.
You said Dynamite.
Dynamite.
Yeah. So it might be that Dynamite didn't have it and now they're getting it. So they're just picking it up from wherever. I'm not entirely sure. It does feel like, you know, it's like previously on Xena, little blurb would lead you to a, would lead you to believe that there are other Xena comics out there. But from the cover, I didn't see anything that let me know that this wasn't the first issue.
Okay, cool. All right, thank you for that, Rodrigo. And Ashley?
Yes.
Is this a... Are you going to talk about the entire season or just the season finale?
I'm going to talk about the entire season, and I'm going to skirt talking about the finale because there's massive spoilers in
it. Yeah, and many of us still have not watched it yet.
Right.
tell him everything.
So,
that's fine. It doesn't bother me if someone tells... Honestly, and I've said this before, it does not matter if someone tells me exactly what happens because that only heightens my anticipation of seeing it for myself.
Some sad stuff happened. So context, for the listeners, I'm going to tell you about Star Wars Rebels season 2, which they broke up into 2 parts, which I hate when TV does to the deep, dark parts of my soul. So, as I'm wont to do on Major Spoilers, I'm going to start my review with a declarative statement. I think that Ahsoka Tano is the single greatest female character that has ever been in Star Wars.
I would agree.
And so, it was really cool when she became not annoying in Clone Wars, and I really enjoyed when they did the new show on Netflix, and then they did the first season of Rebels, and I kind of thought it was a mess. But the one thing that I liked about the first season was the character of Sabine Wren, who's the teenage Mandalorian girl. And the first season is kind of like the first 2 seasons of The Clone Wars, where they're trying to make a kid's show. And then towards the end, they were like, oh, grown-ups watch this. That's the market that we should play to. And so between the two seasons, we had the fall of Lothal, we had Darth Vader introduced, and then we have had Ahsoka join the show in a really meaningful way because they realized that the same people were watching Rebels who were watching Clone Wars. So they were like, why don't we just take all the great stuff about Clone Wars and stuff it into Rebels and make it canon? And the show became instantly better, also because Mr. Weissman was no longer the showrunner, because apparently he's going to go off and make Young Justice Season 3. So the cool thing about season two is that you get to see some more history of the different characters who make up the team on the Ghost. You definitely still have a lot of focus on Ezra and Kanan. And when you watch children's entertainment as an adult person, you kind of come to realize that all the leads, in this case, 14-year-old Ezra Jedi, are Mary Sues. And that can be a difficult thing to wrap your head around. But you just kind of have to go with it. And for the most part, I think they do a good job at explaining more about how Ezra taps into the Force. There's a really interesting episode with, like, literally giant space whales. With, like, octopus legs called Pergil.
Yeah.
And it seems like it tricks you at first. And Rebels does this a lot. But it tricks you into thinking, like, this is the dumb animal tie-in episode for eight-year-olds. But the idea behind it is really profound. And you get a sense of Ezra is this really sensitive Force user in the way that Luke was. But they do a thing with him where they're kind of, the season focuses on his struggle between light and dark. So you basically have him being a carbon copy of Luke and Anakin. And I understand, because those are the two most compelling characters, you know, that we focus two trilogies on. But when you're not an eight-year-old, it does get a little tired. So the addition of, like, we learn about Hera's backstory, who's the pilot of the ship, which is really cool because I wanted to really like her in season one. And I like Vanessa Marshall, the voice actress who plays her, a lot. But I really couldn't get into her. And I didn't understand her until season two. And I think that I just want to see more about her and Kanan, because they kind of skirt around the romantic implications of their relationships again, because I think it's a kid's show.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn a lot more about Sabine's relationship with the Mandalorian culture, which is super fascinating. Like, the Mandalorians have always been one of the most interesting aspects of the Star Wars universe, and it's because they're shrouded in mystery. And I think Rebels does a good job at giving you just enough about the specific house that she's from. You learn what family she's from, and if you're familiar with Clone Wars, it has a lot of implications in like Mandalorian culture. So this season does a much better job at parsing out information about each of the characters and tying in very simple but very important overarching narratives and themes. It's not just one-off adventures like you would expect from a show that's written more for kids, because for some reason we treat kids' entertainment like it's for dummies.
Mm-hmm.
Which is too bad. And then, of course, we have Ahsoka brought in. And it's interesting because if you've been watching this franchise since the Clone Wars, like, you've seen her basically go from being the same that Ezra was in the first season, a very young, like, Padawan. And now, even though she's not a Jedi anymore, she's definitely not a master, but she is a matured version of that character. And Rebels has kind of been skirting around the issue of Darth Vader and his rise to power. And you finally get to see Ahsoka dealing with that. And as Anakin's Padawan, that gives some really interesting story beats and some really interesting scenes that come to life. And there's the question raised with her character about, well, how could she survive? Can she survive? Because we obviously don't see her in the original trilogy. And Rebels does a really good job at attacking that very serious subject matter, and because this is set three years before right. A New Hope,
yeah,
and kind of teasing out some of the fates of these characters, but in a way that's not kind of overwhelmingly tragic, because again, it is still on Disney XD. So for the fact that we're getting a lot more interesting storytelling, all the characters are finally becoming, like, quote unquote real people, and they finally started to address some of the questions that I think are inherent in the time period when they're selling this series. I think Rebels has finally come into its own, and I'm so happy. And for me, given the emotional nature of the finale, I definitely would give this 5 out of 5 slices of meatloaf. It's everything that I think a Star Wars TV show needs to do, and it has a lot of cool ladies in it.
Yeah, it does. I think really the kind of turnaround point for me was seeing the Siege on Lothal, the one that had Darth Vader in it. and seeing how everyone was reacting. That was kind of a standalone movie that was outside of the seasons. Definitely worth checking out before you watch season two. The last place that I left off was I believe, the Enemy Mine episode where, what's his name? The gremlin looking dude and the bad empire guy were stranded on the planet together and they had to work together.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Zeb and whatever his name is.
Mutton Chops guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where I've left it off. So I still have some about probably, I'm guessing, four episodes to catch up on. But yeah, I've been really excited about this season, just like you. It is certainly better. And when season one started, I watched the first two episodes. I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm out. This is too
dumb. Rough, right?
Yeah. And then I forced myself to just burn through it because I'd heard Ahsoka was coming back. And I said, okay, I'm going to just watch everything. And you're right. Midway through, they started to get their stuff together. And season two has just been really fantastic. So
yeah,
good.
And it's a great companion to the movies while you're waiting for Rogue One to come out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Because there are some things going on as the rebels are trying to band together to actually gather more people to their cause. That really does set up Rogue One and really is giving us a good insight as to what's going on going into A New Hope. So very cool. All right. Thank you, Ashley and Rodrigo and Matthew and Stephen, of course, doing his thing.
everyone, pretty good.
You can head over to majorspoilers.com and check out more reviews on all sorts of cool things over there. And one of the things that's over there is the Major Spoilers Poll of the Week.
Poll of the Week, 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 week.
Sent in by a listener. Forced to choose, which Wonder Twin would you want to be? Zan or Jaina? Everybody knows who the Wonder Twins are, right?
Mm-hmm.
They appeared first in the Super Friends animated show to replace Marvin and Wendy, who I actually like better than Zan and Jaina.
But, Marvin and Wendy were pretty inexplicable, though.
But I like them a lot better. I thought their fashion sense was a lot better. Plus, Wendy was so cute.
Wendy was cute.
For a three-year-old, that was pretty awesome stuff. So Zan and Jaina are aliens.
From
Planet Exor, who have the ability to shapeshift when they come into contact with one another. So Zan, the boy, has the ability to take any form of water, whether that be ice or a liquid form or a vapor form. He can do all of that. And Jaina, his sister, can take on any animal form. Interestingly, they all take on the animal forms of what's on Earth. I don't know if it's their primal connection to the planet or not, but there you go.
Plus they are one with the red.
Yes. So what would you rather have, Rodrigo? Would you rather be Zan and have the ability to take on the form of water and be carried around in a bucket by a monkey? Or would you rather be Jaina and be any animal that you like?
Be able to turn into a monkey that carries a bucket of water.
Yes, exactly.
I guess. See, the thing is, I'll start out by having a defense for Zan because he gets a bad rap. But even in Super Friends, we see him take on like a lot of like really kind of arbitrarily powerful forms of water.
Yeah, he turned into a typhoon once.
Yeah, so it's like. He gets a lot of crap for, you know, turning into a bucket of water. And part of that was from those Cartoon Network shorts or Boomerang, maybe, that specifically were making fun of him for being able to turn into a bucket of water.
Yeah.
I think being able to maintain sentience and cohesion as any form of water is actually hugely powerful. I mean, does he control every individual droplet? You basically can't hold him if he can turn into water vapor or anything like that. Whereas, you know, any sort of animal, you'd figure she'd still be tied to having to breathe or something like that, right? So the implications of Zan's powers make him, I think, by far, not just one of the most powerful or the most powerful super twin, but in fact, one of the most powerful members of the Super Friends. So I would go with Zan just because, at the very least, figuring out the limitations of my new powers as one of the Wonder Twins now would be a lot of fun I think just trying it out.
There was a Justice League, for those people who are maybe not old enough to remember the Super Friends or have seen Zan and Jaina in comics, there was a Justice League Unlimited episode that essentially dealt with the Ultimate that had two characters that essentially were Zan and Jaina. And the main sequence that I'm thinking of was Zan fills up a room with water and Jaina turns into a whale, I think, in that episode.
It was like a plesiosaur.
Yeah, something like that.
Actually, she ridiculously turns into a T-Rex for no reason, goes to show that the Ultimen were like super green.
Yeah.
They weren't that well trained. Yeah,
I would agree with you, Rodrigo, that Zan's powers are really kind of cool and powerful. Problem is that if I had to be Zan, I'd be constantly sitting there going, "Man, my sister's hot," and that's too weird. I'm going to have to go with Jaina. I would have to go with Jaina simply because I think turning into any animal is also cool. So I went with Jaina. Ashley, who would you like to pick?
Well, seeing as I now know everything that I have ever known about the Wonder Twins, other than the fact that they have rings.
Here's the best part. They have to touch one another in order to, say, Wonder Twin powers activate so they can form of water and form of T-Rex. But sometimes they're putting cages just a little bit too far apart, so their space monkey Gleek puts his nose in between so he can make that connection so that they can turn into whatever they want to turn into. Now you know everything you need to know about the Wonder Twins.
Well, that is literally everything. Yeah.
That's gross because I don't want to touch my brother. So based on that, and if you follow me on Facebook and know the sheer amount of fox and bat pictures I post, if I was Jaina, I could turn into either or possibly both of those animals at the same time. So I got to go with Jaina. Definitely. Sure. Animals.
There was a comic book issue, and I had this, and it was one of those comic books where the drugstore said they returned it by tearing off the covers. Because when my mom was a teacher, somehow she had a box full of stripped covers, stripped comics in her classroom. And I remember pulling out a Super Friends one where they went to a party, a Halloween party, and somebody took over and was kind of transforming everyone into the horrors that they came as. Yep. And Zan took on the form of Icy Death. So he was a skeleton in ice form. And Jaina actually formed like half cat, half bat. So
cat,
bat. Awesome.
Ashley, I think maybe you might be onto something. Very cool.
I already am in the headcanon. DC can hire me anytime to write that.
And Matthew, and how did you vote this week?
I actually believe that is Super Friends number 8, if memory serves.
It might be. I didn't know. It didn't have a cover.
But here's the deal. The thing that you have to keep in mind is that both of them are ridiculously overpowered. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they are young trainee superheroes makes a difference because Jaina did at least once turn into a dragon thing that was kind of like Zok the Laserway dragon because Hanna-Barbera likes to reuse animation, and that's cool. Sure. But she can turn into the form of any animal that she can physically picture and knows the name of, because if she says the wrong name, she turns into the wrong animal.
It could be a dinosaur.
Right. That to me is ridiculously powerful. If she can conceptualize it, she can be it. On the other hand, Zan can actually physically transform into any state of matter. He can control liquid. He can draw additional liquid into his body to become a giant, like frost giant, like he did and hit the guy with the big frost giant club. I mean, it's ridiculous. So what it really came down to me was, if I had to be incredibly overpowered, would I rather have a power that's incredibly versatile or a power that's incredibly cool and requires me to know all sorts of obscure things and their names? And so based on that, obviously I had to go with Jaina because, frankly, if you were Jaina, you could just spend your day in the ornithological catalogs going through zoology, going through every dinosaur ever made. You could be like, I'm a kenduru fish. You can do all of these terrible things, and all it really counts on is your ability to picture an animal and say their name clearly.
I don't even know if it was picture an animal. It was just a form of whatever, and she turns into it. So it's maybe just being able to pronounce the words correctly.
Not only that, I do pick Jaina, but I want people who mock the Wonder Twins to think about this. I've said it before, and I will say it again. I defy you to think of an emergency situation that would not be improved by the presence of a gorilla with a bucket of water.
Yeah.
Something's on fire, gorilla Antarctic, puts it out.
Antarctic expedition.
Antarctic expedition. All right. You got a gorilla, right? The gorilla is strong.
Not used
to cold.
But
the gorilla is very strong. And before she succumbs to the cold, she can help you to dig an igloo, like an underground shelter. And Zan being made of water can actually turn into ice and help keep that shelter sealed against the external forces.
Freeze in the bucket.
But that's not the point. He can change his form.
Only if they touch. Only if they touch.
Well, she's right there. She's a monkey.
Yeah, that's one of the weird things that never
prehensile limbs.
I think it only happened in maybe the animated series once, where Zan went from a cloud form to actually raining. Because every other time, if he needed to change into an ice chair so that Glee could be carried along, they had to touch so he could go from water to something else.
Right. And in certain situations, Gleek has actually acted as intermediary, and contact of each of them with Gleek was able to trigger the powers the same as contact with themselves. And Gleek has a rubbery tail.
Yeah.
So Gleek could theoretically stretch between them, but still.
Whim of the Rider powers.
Right.
And oh, yes. This is like
Scarlet Witch
on.
Has that.
Yeah, this is like full-on golden into Silver Age nonsense.
Oh, yes. And glorious Silver Age nonsense at that. I believe that Zan once turned into liquid nitrogen. I can't confirm it, but I believe that is true.
Almost makes him cooler.
Right?
Oh, get it? Because he's liquid nitrogen?
It does make
All right. Matthew, how has everyone voted in the Major Spoilers poll of the week thus far?
Let's see if I close the window. No, I didn't. Yeah, I'm awesome. Right now, with 69 votes, nice, we are looking at 30% Zan, 70% Jaina. Hmm. So a 2-to-1 split, preferring zoological anomalies to the ability to change your state and form. And I agree with Rodrigo. Probably a lot of that is that he turns into water.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Zan is
the Aquaman.
Next to Aquaman.
Yeah.
He's right next to Aquaman in line for superheroes that get picked on because people haven't actually thought out what they actually do.
Right.
And because they're, you know, the subject of pretty funny stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Very true.
Yep. Wait till you read the comics where Zan had to put on a blonde wig and pose as a foreigner, while Jaina could just transform her hair and ears to look like a human.
Wait till you read the one where, to prank their friends, he turned into a pool of water and she turned into a topless mermaid. So when you're half naked, floating in your brother's... Never mind.
There was actually a really cool pair of action figures that came out of the San Diego Comic-Con about maybe 8 years ago, where you opened it up and it had them posed in the box and where they were touching, you can, and I may still have this somewhere in the Nerd Room of Doom, but you can push the button and you can hear them say, "Wonder Twin powers activate." And it's got their real voices and everything. And it's got the sound effects and all that kind of stuff. It was a nice package. And that's one of the nice things about going to the San Diego Comic-Con and getting some of those hard to find or exclusive action figures, because the packaging is fantastic on those. And I do believe that I kept Zan and Jaina in their original packaging, although I'm sure the battery has leaked and ruined them.
Melted everything.
Yes, by now. So there
you go. Just maybe a month ago, I was having a bad day, and I discovered that Michael Bell, who voiced Zan, was still alive, and that literally made my bad day better. That's how impressive Zan and Jaina.
Yeah.
In general, I think all of the characters that came out of Wonder Twins, or not one of them,
Super Friends,
like, were weirdly really interesting. Mm-hmm. Some pretty racist, some not very well thought out, but there was like a core of like really smart ideas in there that really could have been developed a lot better.
There were, but there's something Matthew and I kind of talked about this, I think off mic, off recording several weeks ago. But when you look at the art style of the Super Friends, the Wonder Woman, the Batman, the Superman of the 1970s. That style is still what most branded items are using today.
Yeah.
Like if you go and buy a Superman a greeting card. That Superman on the cover is either going to
be
the
Garcia Lopez Superman from the late 70s.
And all the Wonder Woman merchandise is kind of the same way. If you go and get a greeting card or a package wrapping or just something, it is that classic look of those. And I'm wondering if because of our nostalgia for Super Friends and because we've kept that graphics or DC has kept that graphic style since 1975, it perpetuates our impression of what those characters are so that when we have a movie like Batman v Superman, which let's not get into the merits of Batman v Superman, but you have these different takes on the characters, even a costume change, and suddenly people just flip out because it's actually contradicting with the marketing message that DC sends out because they're using, you know, 45, 50 year old graphic treatments.
Very much so. And I think that, you know, the reason that Aquaman gets the crap that he does is because Super Friends had a no violence mandate. And 80% of the cool stuff that Aquaman actually does in the comics is related to his ability to be uniquely violent and maybe telepathically control you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of issues with that, I think, that come up. And part of people's, I don't want to say ownership, but people's identification with these figures and the way that people really approach them is based on Super Friends.
Yes.
There's a point where in Kingdom Come, Alex Ross comes out and says, I didn't know what to do with the Martian Manhunter because he wasn't in Super Friends.
Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Rodrigo?
I think it goes both ways. I think to a certain degree, Super Friends and this Super Friends aesthetic has maintained those images. So yeah, it does cause a disconnect when we see it in other ways. But also, there's a reason why these have been maintained, because maybe DC puts out a bunch of cups with the new 52 armor Superman and people are like, do you have anything with the real Superman or with the original Superman or with something that looks more like Christopher Reeve maybe?
Mm-hmm. And the reason why we get things that try and strive so hard for adult relevancy and fighty and gritty dark Superman and doing what they do is because of the perception of Superman as the friendly, smiling Danny Dark guy who never does anything but punch an asteroid
of Superman. Do a search. I know this was going around on Facebook for a while, but you can go and see the style guide that Garcia Lopez, and I think he posted it even on his Facebook page.
Yes.
And I guess this may be, is this the 1982? Yeah, it's the 82 style guide is, I guess, what I'm looking at. Although it's the same style guide from 75. But it's got
Firestorm in 82.
But the crazy thing is, we have these giant, and I don't want to give Fathead credit, but it may be Fathead. We have these giant stick-on decals for the boys' rooms based on their names. So in the oldest boys' room, Mason's room, we have a giant Superman. And in the youngest, we have a giant Batman on the wall. And I'm looking at those, I'm like, holy crap, those are 50-year-old designs that are still being licensed out by people. It's really weird. Ashley, do you have any thoughts on this or reactions to this?
Well, I think that's interesting because I've never seen Super Friends. But I was going to hazard that in 20 years' time that the Bruce Timm House style might take over that.
Mm-hmm. It's starting to.
It's not as widely merchandised, you know, like in just like printing on all the stuff that Target has that's on brand in that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's old enough now that everyone is very nostalgic for it, and everything that they printed on or every figure, you know, like the Batman line that they're doing, and I'm sure the Superman line that will follow. I think that that's going to be the next thing that's going to come around. I think that's very interesting.
That will be definitely some great insight there, Ashley. I like that because I have noticed some of that happening. I just haven't seen it just be as prevalent as what we see with these old designs. So definitely go check it out. Jose Luis Garcia Lopez's Facebook page has a lot more of this. I'm looking at it right now where you can go back and see that style guide.
If you search for his name, they will start popping up there.
Yeah, but no, specifically, I'm talking about
60 turnarounds.
Yeah, they are. They're really great to look at if you want a really good look at history. So thank you, everybody. We got off on a side topic there, but that is kind of the name of the game here at the Major Spoilers Podcast. That is what we does. We also talk about Tweaked Audio headphones. Tweaked Audio is sponsoring this episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Somebody tweeted to me today, I believe. It was either today or yesterday, depending on when you're listening to this. Hello, future people. But they said, hey, Steven, thanks for recommending the Tweaked Audio headphones. Got a pair. And you're right. They sound great. And they do. They sound great. They look great. I love the flat cable design. It's my new favorite design for any kind of cable. If I can get in a flat cable design, I want it. And I blame Tweaked Audio for that. But best part about this whole deal is you go to tweakedaudio.com. That's T-W-E-A-K-E-D audio.com. You enter the code MAJOR on checkout. You get 33% off the price. Can't beat that. Tweaked Audio, sponsoring this episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you guys for doing that. So this week, I said we were either doing a mailbag episode or an interview episode. And if you already saw the title of this episode, you know that it is mailbag time.
Time to anger Matthew.
Yes, Matthew hates emails.
Because emails don't make that noise.
They do.
Emails go.
So some of these, I've curated some of these. Some of these are just, hey, I like what you guys do. Some of them are promoting some of our other shows that you may not know about. And some of them have some very real questions to them. Hey, Major Spoilers Podcast. This is from Paul in Eugene, Oregon. I've been catching up on my podcast lately, and I listened to the last few Major Spoilers Podcast episodes the other day. I just wanted to say I think Ashley joining the weekly team was a great addition! Exclamation point! She's been providing some awesome commentary and opinions, and she really balances out the discussion. Also, congratulations on the new job, Ashley.
Thank you. That's really nice.
So let me ask you, would you be for people who are going to major conventions, will you be attending with Top Cow or not? Do you have that information right now or not?
I will be at San Diego Comic-Con and New York Comic-Con and Kamikaze, working at the Top Cow booth and probably doing some other stuff that I haven't heard back about yet, whether I could talk about it.
Okay.
But you can mostly find me hanging out at Top Cow because it's my job now. So yeah, those are the only ones that I know that I'm going to for sure. Oh, and Phoenix Comic Con. I lied. I just got approved for Phoenix Comic Con.
All right. Awesome. And then just real quick, since we're talking about comic book conventions, Emerald City Comic Con is coming up this weekend. Rodrigo, are you by chance going to Emerald City or not?
I am not. Okay. I wasn't planning on it to begin with. I don't know if I can get tickets. And right now I'm actually sick.
Oh, so that's too bad. Okay. So also the other thing, some people have now discovered that you're up in Seattle. Yep. Are there any, you don't have to share this information if you don't want to, but are there any gaming shops where people might accidentally bump into you or places that people might be able to see you and get maybe an autograph?
I'm pretty reclusive. Apparently moving to a city hasn't much helped my interaction with people, but I do sometimes end up at a place called Mill Geek Comics, which is in Mill Creek, and that's a little joke.
I get it.
So I was there for the Shadows Over Innistrad pre-release, and I'm there every once in a while on Thursdays. But it's a nice place. So if you go there and play Magic with people, that's cool. But going there specifically to find me is going to be kind of a crapshoot.
And until the next Magic release.
I have been making the midnight pre-releases fairly consistently, so that's probably the best chance.
All right, cool. Hey there, Steven and Co. Exclamation point. I thought you'd be interested, albeit possibly only vaguely, in my getaway drug into comic books. I was listening to a bunch of past Major Spoilers podcasts with Ashley as a guest back before she was a regular. One in particular, wherein she was talking about Sunstone. I went to check it out and got hooked immediately. I read the lot, bought all of Witchblade as a result, got then hooked on Aphrodite 9 or Ix, and now I'm looking into Death Vigil. So I'd like to say thank you, Ashley, Stephen, Matthew, Rodrigo, and the podcast for getting me involved in comic books.
I just read all of Death Vigil today. It's amazing.
Cool. And the good thing is, again, this was sent a while ago. These have been backlogged for a while. You already know the smirking scarecrow who sent this in that we did review the entirety of the Sunstone not too long ago, Volume 1. Yes, indeed.
Nice stuff.
P.S. Matthew, Stephen, Rodrigo, Rob, Brian, Adriana, Sam, Critical Hit is by far the best podcast currently I or have ever listened to. So that is the smirking scarecrow. Good morning, exclamation point. I'm a longtime listener and became a gold VIP member. Because it's fun. I don't want to yell.
No, stop it.
I don't want to go, good morning. I'm a longtime listener and became a gold VIP sometime in the early 2014s. After listening to Critical Hit for months and then Top 5, completely addicted, I finally turned on the MSP. I'll never forget it. I was at a diner and don't know if it was the newest one or not, but my first MSP was the Make Steven Cry edition. And I was getting all choked up on dinner with you there. I'm starting to get choked up thinking about that episode right now. After all, I knew I had, after that, I knew I had to put my money where my earbuds were and started supporting the cause. Thank you so much. And really, seriously, we can't continue doing Major Spoilers without the support of fine VIPs like Ryan, who's writing in here. So please, if you like this show, literally for $2 a month, less than the cost of a comic book a month, you can support what we do at members.majorspoilers.com/subscribe if you want to go right to the subscribe page. But go check it out and see what else we have over there. A lot of good stuff. Okay, so here's I hope this isn't creepy, comma, but you and the rest of the gang have become some sort of friends to me. I was 24 in 2014, and before my birthday in that year, I had become both divorced and rejected by every graduate school to which I applied. That sucks. It was a very long year. You guys have been fun place to turn to during those tough times. You were discussing Shane. You were discussing Shane on Zach on Film. Holy crap, what a horrible movie to be listening to while all that other stuff was going
sad,
on.
Right?
Yeah. I listened to Shane as I packed all my belongings into my jalopy and headed off to a new city to try and restart. The podcast network got me through a couple of awful post-graduation, and I have a useless degree in ancient languages type of jobs. you were the soundtrack to my weight loss journey. I think Ryan had written to me previously about weight loss. And Ryan, if this is the same Ryan, let me know. But you were the soundtrack to my weight loss journey in which I lost over 35 pounds. Then you were the soundtrack to my first marathon. Congratulations. I went to Emerald City Comic Con, my first, mostly because of you, and met Adriana there just as she was leaving Critical Hit. You guys were there calming me down as I got ready for my first dates after everything happened. And it's been great hearing from each of your hearing each of your journeys as well. I admire the passion in which you run Major Spoilers and the risk you have taken to see your dream come true. Now, this is a long letter, but I want to get through this because he did ask kind of an important question towards the end. But this past autumn, I reapplied to graduate school and learned a few days ago that I was accepted, given a fellowship, and will be starting at Notre Dame in August.
Yay.
This is awesome.
This letter is a roller coaster.
Yes, I know, right? This is terrifying, isn't it? Because wait until you see the turn. This is terrifying as it is exciting since I grew up in Portland, Oregon, went to the University of Northern Washington, and now live in Seattle. I know no one past Idaho, but he's going to make that 2,100-mile drive and start a new chapter. It'll be easier knowing that I can always check with my friends at Major Spoilers. I won't be alone. Thank you. Let's see. You know, I never still... getting a little choked up because I'm so excited for Ryan and all how his life has changed. I've still never read a single comic book in my life, but I never tired of listening to you, Matthew, Rodrigo, Victoria, Zach. I think he means Ashley. And Zach and everyone else discussing, debating, and deconstructing and evaluating them. Although I must be honest, my favorite episodes are all the weekend type editions. You should really think about bringing those back in Critical Hit. Ugh, so damn good. Again, the last four paragraphs are just to say thank you so much for all that you do. Now, finally, my question. I know you don't like to talk about politics on your show, so I thought I would ask. Oh, somebody just screwed that up. Thanks, Matthew. There we go. All right. Now I lost my place. Here we go. Now, finally, my question. I know you don't like to talk about politics on your show, so I thought I would just email this question. What in the hell is going on in Kansas? And he links to
the New York Times.
Just all the crap stuff that Kansas is doing. I mean, if you follow me on Twitter, you know that I will routinely post it has been 0 days since the state of Kansas has done something stupid. Mm-hmm. And I read this article. I like to be informed because I want to. But before I just write off the governor as a crazy Republican, remember, I'm from the Northwest. So by default, I'm pretty damn liberal. I was wondering if I could get your take on the situation. Are things so bad that they might be actually shutting down schools? Are Kansans, that's how we call ourselves, really right tilted as the governor in the article seemed to indicate? How do you feel about all of this? Do you agree that these judges are being activists? If you're uncomfortable answering these types of questions, I understand. But if not, love to hear your take on the events on the state in a strange politics and political time in which we live. Hope all of your dice rolls are critical hits. From Ryan. Thank you, Ryan. I'm really glad that Ryan writes these. And in fact, before we get into the political side of it, it really hits me in the heart to know that what we do has an impact on people's lives.
Yeah.
We hear.
I'll vouch to that friend thing because I was a longtime listener of Major Spoilers before I got to join the team. And it really is true. Like, when you listen to something for so long, and I mean, we're pretty open here. Mm-hmm. It's like hanging out with your friends that you just never get to answer.
Or, you know, and I feel the same way. And I mentioned before at the top of the show, mysterious AI Ashley. I've never met you, but I feel very connected to you through our interactions here. And I'm glad that a lot of people feel that same connection with us. And I hope that we can keep those friendships, whether we ever meet you in person or not. I hope we can keep those going. And I mean, we have heard from people who are stationed overseas in the military who say that Critical Hit has gotten them through some rough times. We hear from people in groups that are being targeted by our Kansas governor that really appreciate what we do, to be open-minded and to try to create a safe environment at Major Spoilers for people to be from. It really means a lot to me that we are doing that for you. And though we may not have the listenership that a Mark Maron might have, or an Adam Carolla, or an NPR podcast might have, I'm glad we're having some impact in people's lives. And that means a lot to me. We, as far as the politics go, we have been talking about our Kansas governor for years, and almost 8 years now. And for people who have been listening to us a long time, know that Rodrigo's job at PBS was significantly impacted because of our governor. And at the time, people were like, so the governor wants to cut the arts. Big deal. But it is a big deal, Rodrigo.
It is. And really, so a lot of this came out during the Obama-Romney race, right? Because Romney made a comment about Big Bird. And people were like, hey, Rodrigo, you work for PBS. What do you think? And I was like, I'm not surprised, because the platform is cut programs, drop taxes, right? So that's how this money is going to flood into the state. And I happen to work for an entity that was severely hit by that. I think for a while, Kansas was the only state that didn't have a government-funded arts council. I think that has maybe changed because of raging public outcry, but who knows at this point.
Here's the thing. When I was working at the university, we had to have sometimes monthly meetings with the president of our university, especially as it became chair of our program. And I remember going to one meeting, and that was kind of another kind of writing on the wall moments for me, where he pulled out a document and showed it to us and passed it around. We all had copies of it. Was basically the Republican agenda. And it was literally, this is what the Republicans had all agreed to do with the governors. It was just a step-by-step thing of, here are all the policies that we need to interact as Republican governors across the entire country. And you can see a lot of these same policies being enacted in other states. The problem with Kansas is that, and I will refer to that again, the problem with Kansas is the legislature is mostly Republican, right? And because of that,
and far right Republican.
Yes.
I mean, yes.
There was this surge that basically took out all the moderates and replaced them with Tea Party and, you know, just far right wing Republicans.
And because of that, it's very easy to get any kind of legislation passed that the governor wants to, because it's basically all, there's nobody to oppose the idea or any of the craziness that goes on. So we have seen cuts in funding. We've seen cuts to education. I think the article that Ryan is referencing is that the budget, we used to have a mandatory, the state of Kansas has to have a balanced budget every year. And if not, you had to go back and you had to rework the budget until it was balanced, or else it couldn't be approved. A couple of years ago, the governor, I guess, made it mandatory, and I guess the legislature went with it, that they could work on a 2-year budget, floating budget.
Right.
So the budget was supposed to be good for 2 years, and it could float, and you could actually take in a significant amount of debt. And that meant that, according to the governor, and this is, and you can go look up Republican Utopia. This is kind of the idea that he's following. And again, many other states are doing this. Texas is doing the same thing. Florida tried to do the same thing. I want to say Arizona has kind of done some of the similar things, but basically they're trying to cut taxes. They're trying to cut spending as much as they can, with the notion that because small businesses, and this is one of the things that Major Spoilers does benefit, because we are a business in the state of Kansas, we don't have to pay any state income tax, which is interesting. We still have to pay federal tax. But because I'm a small enough business, Major Spoilers does not have to pay state tax. The idea is that because of that, I have all of this other money to, or other businesses have all this money to go out and hire people, move here because they don't have to pay those state taxes. And of course, when you hire people, they in turn turn around and spend more money and help the economy. And this was going to be a huge boost to the state of Kansas. 2 years later, we are like $684 million in the hole.
Yeah.
And even during the last election, when this came out to light, he was like, well, we just have to try harder. We just have to keep doing this. And as
double
long as we
down.
Keep on. Yeah, basically, that's what he said, is we have to double down and continue to do this. And at that time, I think we're $250 million in the hole. Now we're $680 some million dollars in the hole. And now people are starting to take notice. I don't know if it's the New York Times article or there was a Forbes article that also went into depth.
I think it's
into
the
this.
Forbes article. Yeah.
Yeah. And Matthew and I have been sharing this back and forth that talks about another state that was also doing this exact same thing. And they're also in trouble. And the thing is, the schools now are not funded equally. They don't get the same amount. I don't exactly know how the schools are funded, but they're not being funded accordingly. And so the judiciary system, the Supreme Court said, this is not in line with what the state constitution says about having a balanced budget. The states, the schools are not funded correctly. You have until June 30th to properly fund the schools, or the courts will not allow the schools to open in the fall, is where the juxta of this argument is coming from. Mm-hmm. Which, if you're a parent, is kind of a freak out moment, because what do you mean the schools are not going to open in August? What will I be doing with my children? How are they going to get educated? They've already cut funding to special programs, and my son is in, and I think Matthew's daughter is also in special advanced courses. Those have had huge cutbacks to where they have gone on zero trips. They have almost nothing in supplies to do stuff. And how is my advanced child supposed to advance further and compete with other schools if we don't have this funding? The upshot is that the governor, and this happened before the legislature made this ruling, the governor has been threatening this quote unquote liberal Supreme Court that if they continue to do these kinds of things, that they will not fund, that the right. legislature will not fund the Supreme Court and essentially fire the justices
right.
if they don't get in line. And that's kind of disturbing, too.
What it really boils down to is the man has no concept
right.
that anyone could ever have a realistic counterposition. There is no doubt in his mind that what he is doing is the only possible right thing. And it comes down to a question in my mind of where is that certainty coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is not matching with the glittering generalities that he likes to throw
right.
at the situation. And I think that the biggest problem is really right now, having had to fund the courts for another year, they're working on putting into place a process to impeach judges
yes.
who do their job because they are, quote unquote, usurping the power of the legislature.
Yes, which is just
again,
ridiculous.
It's a situation. It really is. It's a situation where because of the support that he has and because that support in the state of Kansas seems to be at least a majority of the voting populace,
mm-hmm.
he believes that he is the majority in every possible situation.
What's funny is he has a Twitter account, and he will tweet out things that are like, hey, everybody in the state loves me. And the responses, just go and look, the responses to this are like, I don't like people that just come out and just boo people and spew hate at people.
Ooh.
But some of the comments that people have responded to his Twitter are just like outrageous. Like this whole thing when they were talking about, oh, if the Kansas City Royals stayed in Kansas, or they were talking about a specific player on the Kansas City Royals.
Oh, yeah.
If he stayed in Kansas, he would get a huge tax break. And then everyone's like, number one, you do realize that this player lives
in
Florida and that the Royals are in Missouri. And it's just this idiocracy, and I don't want. The worst thing is we've seen a lot coming out from North Carolina and from, I think, was it Mississippi just signed it today?
Just today.
Where they are the whole identify your sex bathroom issue for people that are transgendered and other LGBT community.
It is called the, quote, Religious Freedom Act.
Whatever it is. It's complete bullshit is what it is. It's just it's an attempt to, and I know people are going to flood our iTunes thing with, look at these liberals, da, da, da. It's just an attempt to marginalize people. North Carolina and Mississippi have gotten away with this, quietly the state of Kansas has also gotten away with this, not on the broad level that these other two states have, but this has been signed in for maybe a month now, that colleges and universities and primary and secondary schools, people can report people who, I guess they feel threatened by, I don't know what it is, but if you're not going to the bathroom correctly, people can have you fined for up to $5,000. And that has been signed in for over a month now at the state of Kansas. So while it's not as far reaching as some of these other states are going, it essentially is encouraging students to rat out people, target people, persecute people, so that they get a reward, and also so that that other person gets fined. I can't explain what's wrong with Kansas. I think the closest thing you can look at is a book called "What's the Matter with Kansas," because it gives you an idea of how we went from the original form of Republican government to this current form of Republican government.
Well, and the real issue where all that power comes, because the listener asked the question, is like, well, what do actual Kansans think about this? And the issue with that is that Kansas is a deeply religious state. Kansas is basically the buckle on the Bible Belt.
Right.
And that hasn't always necessarily been a bad thing. Kansas joined the Union when it became a state because they could not abide slavery from a religious standpoint. Like, all the Kansans with their little Bibles got together and they said, no, we can't do this, right? Which is great. But nowadays, Kansans in general will vote for the party that has the Bible, that talks the most about the Bible, basically. And that's Republicans.
And that's...
So, we're going to go through this again and again. And I say we. I lived in Kansas for 10 years. I don't live there anymore. But
I wonder why.
I mean, honestly, that was part of it. Kansas has become actively hostile to
everyone.
To everyone. Yeah, literally to everyone. It started out minorly hostile. But seriously, in the years that I've been there, it's just gotten worse and worse and worse. And now it's to the point where it's actually affecting white people. So this is how bad it's gotten.
Yeah.
When I first moved to Kansas, I actually worked at a legislative show. Like, we did a show and people would come in. And the way that people talked about the education budget, it was basically sacrosanct. You couldn't take anything out of the education budget. Every politician in Kansas runs on education, religion, and something else. Probably farms,
yeah.
Unless they're an urban senator,
and then it's smaller government.
Yep, right. And that's the thing, is like, this is how bad it's gotten, that thing that everybody runs on, now they're taking chunks out of it. There is no more money anywhere. Now they're taking money out of the schools.
I'm not trying to demonize Republicans, because this happens to anybody who follows this idea of, oh yeah, let's cut taxes and give everybody free money, because it's just proven that it doesn't work. I went on Twitter, was it 2 weeks ago, Matthew, where I said, I know Jerry Moran. I know Senator Jerry Moran. I like Jerry Moran. I know that he and I ideologically do not align, but I know deep down he is trying to do what's right for the area that he represents. And when he was a representative, it was the Big Red one. It was this area, the state of Kansas, the largest portion of the state of Kansas. And he understood what the people in this area wanted and needed, and he responded accordingly in Washington to that. And Matthew was like, I can't believe you said that. And I was like, well, there are times that he will totally buck the system because he knows that there is something right to do. And literally, I think it was, Matthew, like 2 days later, he was like, you know what? I think we should have these hearings for whoever Obama puts up, for this Supreme Court justice seat. I think it's the right thing to do. And even though you could tell in the statements that he was making that there's no way he would ever approve of that person, he believed from the message that was sent out that he believed in the process, that we have to follow these laws and we have to act regardless of whether we're going to approve this person or not.
Did you see that he reversed that position yesterday?
He reversed this position. And if you look at the reasons, it was from because of political pressure from the Republican Party.
Yeah,
that's the only reason he did that.
Jerry Moran is supernaturally personable. You can't hang out with Jerry Moran. Again, we did a legislative show. You can't be around Jerry Moran and not like him. You have to read about the stuff that he does. Right. And then it's like, wait a minute, this is terrible.
But I know because of the way, and again, from the university perspective, and Jerry was our representative, he lived in Hayes for a long time. I know at one point he lived in Manhattan. But I know when it came to getting funding for programs that we were doing specifically in my department, we could call his office and say, Jerry, we are looking for funding for this. What can you do to help us? And he would do everything in his power to help us get the money that we needed to make our program stronger and better and help these kids and help his area that he was representing. So from that standpoint, I really understand that. Do I agree with him ideologically? Not in the least. But I think he's in the right mindset of I need to do what I've been hired to do. Yeah. And he's doing that to the best of his ability until someone else puts a thumb down on him. I don't know. I know people don't like political discussion, but because this question came in and because it does impact the arts, because it does impact education, because it could be an indicator of things to come, I think it's okay to talk about it a little bit.
Look, man, Kansas is in crisis. The fact of the matter is Kansas is in an economical crisis, and you can't not point out the people who have been in power for 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who literally constructed this, built this mess, and are now claiming that it's the fault of the people doing it wrong.
Right.
That somehow the people under this, and this is the thing, the last six tax estimates made by the governor's office have been
shortfalls.
Ridiculously. Not like, it's like $650 million off. There is something wrong with the perception of reality. And I work literally three blocks from the Capitol building. I see these people every day. And what it really comes down to is a fundamental disconnect between the actions taken and what's really actually affecting the people in the state. So honestly, frankly, the only thing that's going to change it is a major upheaval in the legislature and the gubernatorial office of Kansas.
And everybody's frightened about that because we do have some elections coming up. The interesting thing is, small businesses and businesses in Kansas have said, we actually want to pay taxes.
Right.
Please tax us.
Please want you to do this. We would like to support the state.
And then what does the state do? No, that's okay. Because, again, if you look in Wichita, there is a certain organization in Wichita that not only has pull in the state, but also has pull nationally. And they're saying, no, we don't want to. Are you choking there? Would you like a Coke? Would you like a Coke to drink there, Matthew?
To wash it down, yes.
Yeah. So let's put this another way. And some of the frustrations, and let's bring this back around to comic books. There are times when a comic book publisher does something because they think it is the right thing to do and because it's what they want to do. But then when sales start sagging and fans, and I'm not talking about any particular publisher, I'm talking about all publishers, and fans of those properties are like, guys, you're doing something wrong. Please stop. We want to support your work, but you're doing things that make us so frustrated and angry. We can no longer support you. And all we can do is talk bad about you. And then with that feedback, the publisher continues to do the exact same thing. It has significant impact on that publisher's standing in the comic book community. Go ahead.
Interestingly, the comic book analogy works out really well, because what do comic fans do when they don't like a comic?
They stop buying.
Keep freaking, you know,
well,
they
some
keep
people
buying
do,
it.
Yeah.
And they will buy it for years. This is Kansas. Kansans reelected guy right back into office, and they keep reelecting that same kind of extremist
if you want to find out more
legislature.
Yeah,
over and over again.
If you want to find out more about Brownback,
those are exactly those guys. They're the guys that are like, man, I hate how Batman is going.
Yeah,
I swear, I'm just 10 more issues and then I'm out.
I'm going to finish this arc and then I'm done. Yeah. To wrap it all up, if you want to learn more about Governor Brownback, do a search for the Rolling Stone article about Brownback when he was considering running for president. And that'll give you some more insight into to who he is. So for everyone of the hated political talk, Ashley, I'm sorry. How's life in your bankrupt state? You got $15 an hour pay raise. That's great. I think here in Kansas, they're still arguing over $7.75.
I don't know if we're bankrupt, but I know that we have no water.
Okay, you're also in trouble with water. I think everybody's in trouble.
Whatever. I can't vote, so it doesn't change anything for me.
Well, you get
some of the people I love most in the world, including you guys, live in Kansas. So yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So sorry, everybody, if that took a political turn that you didn't like. I don't know.
I apologize.
I'm angry anyway. So anyway, Stephen and Matthew, this is the great Nate O, who's our number one spoilerite. I have two questions that may be best answered during your Dueling Review podcast, but guess what? This is a question and answer on Major Spoilers. Mm-hmm. Now with the advent of digital comics, what are the benefits of having second, third, fourth, etc. printings of a comic? Also, what triggers off the publisher to say we need to print some more of that comic? I would think that after the main run, that if you did not get it, then you can just somehow go and get it digitally.
That's true.
Anybody have anything before Matthew? Or go ahead, Matthew.
Oh, I'll go.
Sure.
Aha! First and foremost, really the United States Postal Service is kind of a relic of a bygone age. But stamp collectors still exist. And I think that is the best analogy for why I believe that there will always be at least a limited print run of most comics. And by always, I mean until something I haven't foreseen happens. People want that physical copy. And the thing about it is many of the times when you're buying a second or third or fourth printing, it's because you expect the value to increase.
Mm-hmm.
So when that first printing sells out, you're like, oh, well, I better get my hands on the second printing. In some cases, the second printing has a different cover. So the guy who bought that first cover, now you're going to get a second copy. You get the second printing, so you have two episodes. And what it really boils down to is that at least currently, the purchasing of those physical issues, the collecting and physically possessing the paper copies of a comic is still, maybe not the majority, but still a large portion of the comics collecting community.
Yeah.
And it's really a question of demand. I mean, especially if you look at what Image does. In some cases, Image will get the pre-orders, print that many, then go back to the print run for more when the demand is there.
Mm-hmm. And some publishers will even just ship less than they think that they need and then are surprised mm-hmm. when the issue has a higher demand for that as well. I don't know. Ashley, do you have any insight into this?
I would just say that on behalf of, you know, the publishing side of that,
mm-hmm.
if people sell out of your book, why don't you want to just put more of it out there? And I mean, most companies don't count digital sales.
Mm-hmm.
So it really doesn't matter to them how much you sell digitally. I know that when they give you the breakdown of how many issues are sold, it's all through the Diamond distributor. Right. It's not through iTunes. It's not through Comixology. It's not through Amazon. I think until that zeitgeist changes, which might never happen.
Probably not.
I think that we won't see that. But I mean, if people want to keep buying Faith number one, which I think is in its fourth printing.
In fact, it's fifth printing. Yeah. And they've just announced it's ongoing.
Yeah, and Valiant, I mean, Valiant does small runs, so there's definitely that. But if people want it, who cares? You know, there's that certain point. There is the person who because I work retail as well, there is the person who comes in and they only want the number one. But for the most part, there's no value in modern comics mm-hmm. unless you're lucky and you get something like a Saga or a Walking Dead number one. All the value of buying a book to resell it is an older comic, so most people are going to come in and pick it up for the story. They don't really care what the barcode says at the end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Rodrigo, any other thoughts? I don't have any thoughts on this except that when you're able to announce a third, fourth, fifth printing of something, it's good publicity and it may drive more sales.
It still carries cachet and status.
Yeah,
we sold out and now we have to make more, and people loved it so much we're going to go make more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Rodrigo, did you have anything?
Nothing further.
Okay. I started listening to the Major Spoilers podcast about 1.5 years ago after a year of listening to only the Critical Hit podcast. I started listening to the MSP and I made a decision to listen to every episode in order of release until the day I caught up. Right now I'm on episode 274 in the year 2011. This episode's spoiler of the week was, which one are you more excited about, the upcoming Superman movie or the upcoming Batman movie? To which my answer is yes. Before listening to your podcast, I knew about DC and Marvel's complex casts and storylines, but had read maybe 6 actual comic books. Thanks to you and Comixology, I've read roughly 1 trade a month, starting with Crisis on Infinite Earths, and I'm staying current with the new Adventures of Supergirl, yay, which I'm enjoying, even though the most recent issue used the exact same image for Kara's boss for the whole 2 panels she appeared in. For me, the Major Spoilers podcast provides a key element that elevates comic books from a curiosity to an active interest, in-depth discussion about comics interactions with each other on a modern society. Comic book continuity, no matter how snarled it gets sometimes, is what makes it uniquely appealing, especially when there's a comics historian handy to point out each callback or classic character revisited. Great
hey,
job.
That's
on
the- me.
Are you sure? I didn't say you by name. Great job on the podcast, Sierra 2011. I'm happy to be a VIP. Thank you, Torek. And I look forward to listening to the rest, including hopefully a response to this comment, which I will hear in roughly a year.
Well, it's either me or Ashley.
Yes, I think he's talking about Ashley, because Ashley does a podcast called A Geek History Lesson.
Ooh, that's and true. I was not on the show in 2011, however.
No, but last week you did Golden Age Batman. This week you're taking a look at Golden Age Superman.
Heck yeah, we are.
I said, what about?
As taught by the Golden awesome Jason Age Inman.
Superman. Excellent. You do want to check that out. Part of the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. Of course, you can go to geekhistorylesson.com for more about what they're doing over there.
Remember, the Golden Age ends in 1948.
Anthony says, the question I found myself asking yesterday was this. Who has the highest pain tolerance in comics or pop culture? Let's not get this confused with those characters who no longer have pain receptors. They have to have shown in the past event where, whereas they survived some immensely painful trauma that they clearly felt, not your parents getting killed, thus showing their high pain tolerance. My prime example of someone with a high pain tolerance is Wolverine. Let me know your thoughts on this from Anthony.
Anthony.
I was going to go Wolverine or Superman, I guess, would be the two that I would go high pain tolerance. Rodrigo,
I imagine it would be.
Go ahead, Ashley.
I was going to say, I would imagine it would be easier to compartmentalize your pain tolerance when you know it's going to grow back.
Oh, that's yeah, true. There you go. That's a good answer.
The thing about Superman, though, is that I believe that Superman, while he does have expanded senses, he's also very, very difficult to injure, whereas Wolverine is just kind of a squishy guy. I will say that as much as I hate it, it is a terrible moment. It is stupid and dumb and awful. But the Mark Guggenheim issue right around the Civil War, where Wolverine is literally burned to death, every scrap of biological flesh is burned from his skeleton, and then in 3 panels he regrows it and says, ow.
Mm-hmm.
I think as terrible as that moment is, if we presume it's canonical, God help us, I think the only answer has to be Wolverine. Stupid moment. It is stupid and dumb and also bad.
Rodrigo?
I would imagine it's any given member of that like very early run of X-Force. Cause,
yeah, they got beat up a lot.
Well, no, I was going to say, if you're drawn by Rob Liefeld, especially early Rob Liefeld, it's like your back is like contorting in like a super weird way and like their knees are like bending.
Your rib cage is jammed into your thorax.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's just very, very dangerous.
Humans don't even have a thorax.
They do not.
Yet.
Yet. Good evening.
Good evening. Blah.
I know there were a lot of issues with Before Watchmen when it came out, but have you guys thought about going back with a few years reflection on the series? Go back with a few years reflection on the series and see if it was worth it, or if it was adding anything to the original Watchmen, or was it just a cash grab as many felt at the time? Have a nice weekend.
Nope. And yes.
I really have no desire to read any of that, unfortunately.
The problem with Before Watchmen is that Before Watchmen explicitly answers questions intentionally left ambiguous by the original text in ways that are contradictory to the original text.
Wow.
Rodrigo?
That's the thing.
You know, I'm not really interested in it. Like, I really liked Watchmen, but Watchmen is a lot like you know, like the Dark Knight, like the
Dark Knight Returns.
No, no, no. I mean the movie, The Dark Knight.
Oh, Dark Knight. Oh, okay.
As I was watching it, I enjoyed it, and then I said to myself, "I'm never actually going to sit down and watch this movie again." Like, right. it's intense and it's crazy and it's heart wrenching and whatever you want, and it's not my jam at all. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So reading before Watchmen seems like putting myself through a like slightly modified version of that. Mm-hmm. That's probably not going to have the same payoff that Watchmen did. My girlfriend just started reading them. And basically, from what I gathered, she didn't like any of them that she's read, except for the, which one did she say she liked?
The
Night Owl.
Oh, the Night Owl. Yeah.
I don't think she's gotten to the Silk Spectre one yet.
Ashley, any thoughts on Before Watchmen?
Well, I don't like Watchmen, and I have zero interest in anything more about the characters. So to me, it looks like a giant cash grab that I want to avoid from about 20 paces.
Yeah, just 100% cash grab.
And I mean, I've used the word cash grab multiple times, and there have been publishers of not necessarily comic books, but have come at me for saying that. How dare you say that this was a cash grab on our part?
I mean, it's all cash grab if we're going
to
be honest.
Oh, yeah. And that's kind of what my response back to the person was. Yeah, you kind of, if you're doing this because it increases sales, regardless of what the intent is, it's still a cash grab.
I get it because the practices that have been put into play basically since the 80s in the comic book industry are sometimes these like very high, weird pressure things that they do. And it does, and people have started using the word cash grab, and then now it makes it like dismissive. Like you just have somebody in some position of authority or as a critic, if you say cash grab, a whole bunch of the audience disconnects, right? Mm-hmm. So I can see the publishers being sensitive to it the same way they're like, it's not a reboot. It's a remongering.
Oh, man, I'd actually read a remongering.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, guys.
Major spoilers.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Sorry. Oh, crap. I did not write down who this is from. So sorry. This is from Hey Guys Guy. I started listening to Critical Hit back in season one and listened to it religiously for years. And I think what he really means to say, and I continue to listen to it religiously for years. Last year in 2015, I started trying to catch up on the Major Spoilers master feed. It's taking quite a while. We've been doing this for 8 years now, 9 years for the podcast, 10 years for the site. But I love it, even though I haven't read comics regularly since Superman's Resurrection. I started reading web comics when a friend introduced me to Sluggy Freelance back in college. That would have been like 1999, he says. And now read about 15 daily. After just listening to your review of Bean World, you put out too much good content. It takes forever to go through the backlog. I wondered if any of you have heard of 1/0 or have read it. It's an amazing web comic that had a great effect on my thinking. Even as a philosophy psychology major, I would love to hear you guys' thoughts on it. It is a complete series that ended quite intentionally at 1,000 four-panel strips. Remarkably, after being ended for nearly a decade, it's still hosted online at 1/0.com /comicgenesis.com. Oh, I'm sorry. It's 1/0.comicgenesis.com. Okay, there we go. Have you guys looked at this? I looked at it briefly today. I didn't spend a lot of time going through it. But have you guys ever heard of 1/0 or have read it?
I've heard of it. I've never read it.
I'm not familiar.
Okay. Well, there you go. If somebody wants to go check it out, definitely go check it out. Yeah, I thought I'd bring it up. I mean, there are so many webcomics out there, and we've done several webcomic episodes over the years. There's just so much out there, and there's new stuff every day, even the stuff that I thought I was super current on. It's like, oh, now that's like going on a 20-year-old webcomic now. And it's like, really? And then I'll find something like this 1/0 that ended 10 years ago or 5 years ago. And it's like, why did this end? It's really kind of hard to read everything that's out there. Right now, I think I'm reading about maybe 10 daily. It's just too hard for me to keep up with all of the ones that I used to follow. I used to follow like 30 or 40 of them. At one point, like in year one, I think we did the top 75 web comics, and I literally read only 10 of those still today, and that's just because of a time issue. Who is big on the web comics? Reading those, Matthew? No,
I'm about 2 months behind on Order of the Stick and about a year and a half behind on Menage a Three, and that's pretty much it for me. And I only read those when I'm at home because they don't make it through the web at the white
wall. Oh, at the filter?
The wall of the, yeah. Especially Menage a Trois. Good Lord.
Rodrigo?
Yeah, I've really fallen off the bandwagon. I haven't been keeping up with Order of the Stick or Dresden Kodak. Or even, I did get all the way to the end of Kill 10,000 Demons, but then it stopped, or I got to the end, and then I was like, well, I'll just let it refill, and I haven't checked back.
Ah, okay. And Ashley, what about you?
I'm really bad about checking on things regularly, because I have a hard time remembering what day of the week it is. So I will find a single web comic, and then I will read all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will usually buy the book or support the Kickstarter, and then I will promptly forget what it's called.
Yeah.
Like I just finished a really good one about a little half-breed magician girl that I don't remember what it was called, and I read like 1,000 pages of it, and there's 2 books. And I literally can't tell you what it's called.
Hmm. Here's the problem, and I understand why they've done this, but when Feedly came out and when you had RSS feeds became a popular thing, many webcomic people just plop, there's the whole webcomic right there in the RSS feed. So when I go and read the RSS feed, boom, there it is, and I could keep up on all of my comics because I just have an RSS feed where it was literally like reading a newspaper comic strip, and I could just go from PvP to Penny Arcade to blah, 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 all the way down the line. Then the webcomic creators, and I do not blame them at all for this, but they realize that if people are reading it via their RSS feed, they're not coming to the website. Thus, even though the page is getting hit, they're not getting, well, they're not getting the advertising. They're not getting the people clicking on the ad. So now by forcing you to click on the link in the RSS feed to go to their website to read the webcomic, now you're exposed to all of their advertisers. And so now that's why they've removed them from the RSS feeds. And I don't blame them at all. But when that happened, my ability to read a ton of webcomics has been greatly reduced.
Sure. By the way, the comic I was referring to is actually called Kill 6 Billion Demons, which goes to show how long it's been since I read it.
There you go.
That's a lot of demons.
That's a lot of extra demons.
It is.
So we kind of had a long episode this week. Sorry for that, but hopefully that got through some of our mailbag. There's always good stuff to be found in the mailbag, and I cannot wait to open up another letter in the future. If you have questions or comments or whatever that they may be, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. Ashley, anything else you want to add in this week?
Listen to Geek History Lesson.
Yeah, and also, if you are done, I think you and I must have just finished Daredevil about the same time, because Jason have a brand new video up where you give your review of Daredevil Season 2. Totally worth checking out. And maybe we can have another Daredevil Season 2 discussion sometime down the line, but it's a different kind of season, that's for sure.
It's underpants.
Actually, where can people find you?
You can find me, and you can tweet me pictures of Matt Murdock in his underpants, at Ashley V. Robinson, and you can find me hosting Geek History Lesson on the Major Spoilers website, podcast feed, and then every Monday, except when it's not on, I do a Girl on Supergirl, Supergirl Review show, and I'm also going to be starting a Game of Thrones one, so look for all that on MajorSpoilers.com.
And Matthew, anything else you want to add this week, and where can people find you?
Well, my name is Matthew, and I live on the second floor, so you can probably find me there. I don't do the Tumblr very well. I don't do the Twitter very well, but I do them both with gusto and entertainment. And as my wife will tell you after 21 years, by the way, I just celebrated my 21-year anniversary.
Aww.
I know, right? I was just like, wow. I remember when I met her, and then a couple days later, we got engaged, and everybody said, that'll never last. And 21 years later, I go, here's the finger. So that was fun.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah. There you go. And Rodrigo, anything else you want to add, and where can people find you?
You can find my book on Amazon. It's called The Tale of Tallest Rabbit. You can find me on Twitter at Fearsome Critter. You can find me on Tumblr at magicturtle.tumblr.com. And physically, you can find me under a giant pile of blankets because I am super sick right now.
I'm so sorry, but thank you for being here, Rodrigo. I hope you feel much better. Tomorrow. because we have more recordings to do tomorrow.
Tomorrow is another day.
I will crawl out from under my pile to do Critical Hit tomorrow.
Is it a three-dog night, Rodrigo, for you then, or not? You don't even have three dogs, do you?
No, I have two dogs.
Okay.
Both of whom have been sick. I'm actually the last mammal in the house to get sick, actually, because my girlfriend had something too. It's not the same thing.
I was going to say, wow.
Symptoms. It's a different thing each time.
Yeah.
It's mutating. It's learning.
Well, thank you so much, Ashley, for being on the show this week. Thank you, Matthew. And thank you, Rodrigo. And that wraps it up for this issue. Thank you, listeners, for being part of the Major Spoilers experience. We're going to be back next week to discuss Next Wave, Agents of Hate, because we know that you love comics, and we do too. And we'll talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm gonna rearrange your face if you continue to debate whether Logan's claws could pierce Steve Rogers' shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven. Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash, or I swear to God you're gonna spend your twilight years alone.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.